You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus, it's the Friday News Roundup. The FBI seizes documents from the former president's Florida home. Trump takes the Fifth, and Democrats work to pass a sweeping health care and climate change bill. That's today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, the U.S. House of Representatives is poised to pass the Senate's Inflation Reduction Act today. That's the bill that includes, among other things, more than $370 billion in funding for mitigating and adapting to the effects of climate change. Paying for it, there's a couple things built into the bill. Among them, an alternative minimum tax on corporations making above a certain amount of money, also an excise tax on businesses buying back their own stock. One thing that did not make it into the bill, an effort to at least partially change a lower tax rate for something called carried interest for investment managers. We're looking at the tax angles in the new bill, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about these ideas, the idea of a minimum corporate tax for the largest corporations to make sure they pay something at the end of the year? How about additions to staffing at the IRS? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Steve Rosenthal is a senior fellow at the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center. He practiced tax law in Washington, D.C. for over 25 years and was a legislation counsel with the Joint Committee on Taxation. Steve, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. Happy to be here.
Let's talk first about something that's not in the final version of the bill. It was in a little earlier, got a lot of attention, this idea of carried interest and the tax on it. First of all, what is that?
Well, carried interest is compensation to an investment manager, typically private equity managers, and they get a share of their fund's profits, the fund that they manage, and they report that share of profits at the lower 20% capital gains rates. So in effect, they earn compensation taxed at 20% rather than 37%. Quite a good deal for them.
What was the change originally envisioned in the first compromise agreement in this bill before it got taken out?
Well, in 2017, the Republican Congress tried to tackle carried interest by limiting the circumstances in which a private equity manager could report that lower tax of 20%. The fund would have to hold the assets for 3 years. That turned out to be too short because a fund typically holds assets for 5 to 7 years, so it was ineffective. The Democrats wanted to lengthen that holding period from 3 to 5 years and delay the start of the clock until the fund had made substantially all of its investments. So it basically closed a loophole that allowed fund managers to continue to get their 20% profits without having to pay the higher 37% rate. But that was shut down.
Yeah. Can you talk a bit about the politics of this? I know Donald Trump, when he was a candidate for office, talked about getting rid of this. Some Republicans have, some Democrats have over the years. It seems like you could, you know, make a case that this targets hedge fund managers who don't always have the greatest PR. Why does this keep not happening in these big bills?
Well, the managers are incredibly powerful. They have a very powerful trade association, a couple of them, the Private Equity Council, and then separately the Managed Fund Association. And these funds, especially private equity funds, have companies that they own and manage across the country. So they're virtually in every district. And one of the states in which private equity is particularly active is Arizona. And Senator Sinema, and I can't speak to why, but she favors private equity managers and their carried interest. She defends it. And as a consequence, the Democrats lost one of their 50 votes. This bill that's pending has been able to squeak by the thinnest of margins, 50-50 in the Senate, with Kamala Harris casting a tie vote. The Democrats couldn't afford to lose Sinema, so they conceded the carried interest again.
Okay, that's what isn't in it. Let's check out some of the things that are in it. An alternative minimum tax on some of the biggest corporations. What would that do, assuming this is ultimately passed and signed?
Well, Every year, there are news reports that many corporations pay no taxes or very few taxes, notwithstanding the fact that they report very large amounts of income to their shareholders and creditors. And so this alternative tax would make sure that if a large corporation had more than $1 billion of income, they would pay at least 15% of tax on that income. And that income would be determined by the financial reports, those reports that are shared with creditors and shareholders, not determined by taxable income. Taxable income has a lot of allowances and deductions, maybe even some loopholes, you could say. And that allows many corporations to avoid tax. But with this 15% minimum tax, fewer can avoid paying tax.
We are talking about the tax-related provisions in this big bill, waiting for a vote in the House. Steve Rosenthal is with us from the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Jim joins us now in Rice Lake. Jim, hi.
Hi. I'd like to hear your guest's kind of view on my comment that we in America have the golden rule as far as our tax policy, which is that them that has the gold rules. For example, the vast wealthy people in this country, the multi-billionaires or multimillionaires, they never pay any tax because they inherit vast wealth with little or no inheritance tax. Then they don't earn anything because they simply borrow on the vast assets that they've inherited, and you don't pay tax on a loan. And then they die and pass off their vast wealth to their successors. Plus also, for example, Social Security tax only is taxed, I believe, to the first $150,000 or $120,000 of income, which means a person can be making multi-million dollars, but they only pay FICA on the first $110,000. So I'd be interested in your guest's comments on what I believe is a totally jury-rigged system of taxation. Thank you.
Jim, thanks for the call. Steve, I don't think any of that's tackled in this bill, but do you have thoughts on that?
Oh, sure, I have thoughts. Your listener described what is known as the buy, borrow, and die strategy. And it's especially a good strategy for some of our most wealthy billionaires who found their company and have very appreciated, valuable stock. And when they die, they pass on that stock to their heirs without any income tax ever being paid on the stock. President Biden, when he was on the campaign trail, promised to close that down and, in fact, sent to the Hill a proposal to tax unrealized gains at death. I thought it was a very sensible proposal. It closed a big loophole and could raise a lot of money. But that proposal never made it out of the House. It took on even more flack than carried interest. And so, you know, hard to say exactly why we can't get progressive legislation, tax legislation through. It's very, very hard. There are other great ideas that fell from the legislation, a surtax for millionaires, things of that sort. But again, the Democrats have the most thin of margins, 50-50 in the Senate. They needed every vote, and some of those votes weren't going to come along with aggressive tax increases on the rich.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking about provisions in the Federal Inflation Reduction Act. Before the House today, they would affect the tax on large businesses, corporate stock buybacks, and other things. Steve Rosenthal is with us from the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the so-called carried interest loophole? Do you wish it had stayed in this bill, a change to that? How about stock buybacks? We'll be talking about that in just a few moments. Do you think the tax system should be set up to discourage big corporations from doing that? How about the corporate minimum tax? Other thoughts on tax changes you would or would not like to see at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Steve Rosenthal, Senior Fellow in the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center. We're looking at tax changes in the Inflation Reduction Act. It's before the House today. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about what you've been hearing about this bill as it relates to taxes, this corporate minimum tax for larger corporations, taxes on stock buybacks, increasing the number of IRS officials, both agents and people who answer your phone calls there? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Steve, let's get to this tax on stock buybacks. What does this do?
Sure. A buyback is a repurchase by a corporation of some of its outstanding stock. And after the last tax bill, the Republican 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, there was a flurry of buybacks, $1 trillion or more. And as a consequence, many politicians, both Republican and Democrats, were angry with the corporations buying back their stock rather than using the larger after-tax profits to invest in their workers and their U.S. plants and equipment. And so there were proposals to prohibit buybacks, but where Congress settled and where the bill is now is a 1% excise tax on buybacks.
What kind of impact do you see that having? Is that something that would stop these stock buybacks and motivate corporations to do things like raise salaries or invest in capital equipment or that sort of thing?
That would be the hope of the politicians. But 1% is rather low. And the other problem is corporations, when they have extra cash, can distribute that cash either through a buyback or through a dividend. And so many corporations may just avoid the 1% tax by distributing their earnings, their profits out as dividends. Again, those amounts will not be invested in U.S. workers and U.S. equipment if that happens. So it's a little unclear what the result will be here.
You've written, I think, elsewhere that stock buybacks could have a disproportionate benefit for foreign investors, for people investing from outside of the United States. Do I have that right?
You have that right. I've been doing research for several years to show the increasing share of U.S. stock held by foreigners. And that increasing share held by foreigners coincides with the buyback phenomenon. And I don't think that's a coincidence completely, because foreigners are tax-free when they sell their stock, and they pay maybe a 30% withholding tax if there's a dividend. So foreigners especially prefer corporations to buy back stock. The foreigner could sell their stock in the buyback, or alternatively, the foreigner could sell their stock later. But in either circumstance, the earnings, the profits that are distributed are not paid out in the form of a dividend, which could be subject to a 30% tax in the hands of the foreign shareholder, but instead the foreign shareholder avoids any tax and may ultimately exit the company without paying any tax at all. And that's all because of the difference between the way we tax capital gains of foreigners, we don't, and the way we tax dividends that are paid to foreigners, and we do at 30%.
Go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Mitchell is with us in Webster. Mitchell, hi.
Hi. I guess I just had one question and a small comment. From what I've heard so far, we seem to be focusing on really trying to squeeze as much tax revenues out of people as possible. And now that this current bill seems to be really focusing on getting tax revenues out of a smaller percentage of people. And I was just really curious, is there anything in the bill or is there some sort of focus right now on really getting rid of taxes, minimizing taxes, and kind of helping the economy through, more money in everybody's pockets?
Mitchell, thanks for the call. Steve, your thoughts on the idea of let's minimize taxes in hopes of, Mitchell says, boosting the economy?
Well, I'm not too sure reducing taxes would boost the economy. It might have a short-term stimulative effect, but taxes are the price of democracy. Our government spends a lot of money on programs that we all demand, whether it's Social Security or whether it's national defense or protection of our health. And those cost money, and we use taxes to pay for it. Interestingly, if you look to a comparison of the U.S. to any other major industrial country, the U.S. has a smaller taxes as a percent of GDP than any of our counterparts, industrial companies. So I don't think we're overtaxed. In fact, we're undertaxed. But your listener has made a good point. Mitchell makes a good point that we're trying to squeeze more out of fewer. This package concentrates on the rich and corporations because Joe Biden made a pledge that no household making less than $400,000 a year should pay any additional taxes. And so because of that pledge, he could only go after the highest income and corporations. And he may yet want to return to that, but actually our tax needs are so large, in my view, eventually we're going to have to go after the upper middle class as well.
Mitchell, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Steve Rosenthal, senior fellow in the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center, looking at tax-related stuff in this bill before Congress. They've called it the Inflation Reduction Act. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Steve, another tax-related part of this is funding for the IRS, funding agents, for one thing, to do audits, but also funding people to answer phones. If anybody, I had to call the IRS because there had been a mistake. Took a lot of time on hold. I think there's a lot of frustration with that. Can you talk about that part, that aspect of this bill?
Sure. The pending bill authorizes $80 billion to spend at the IRS over the next 10 years. That's a lot of money. The Congressional Budget Office estimated, though, if we spend $80 billion, the IRS could bring in $200 billion. So the spending actually will result in a net profit for the government or a net benefit for the government. Now, the question, though, is, well, is that a net benefit for the rest of us? Because there'll be more taxpayers under audit and more taxes presumably collected. And so that's a difficult question. As I explained to the last listener, President Biden pledged not to collect more taxes from those making less than $400,000. So notwithstanding this large budget increase for the IRS, Secretary Yellen has promised that the IRS will not go after the lower income taxpayers, but focus on at the highest income taxpayers and corporations. And of course, when we talk about $80 billion for the IRS, it's not all for enforcement. Only maybe half of it is. The rest is for things like you've described, taxpayer support, modernization of computers, things of that sort, all of which is desperately needed. The IRS budget in nominal terms has been pretty much frozen since 2010. In real terms, it's down 20%. And so we keep adding more responsibilities to the IRS, but giving them less money. And that's a problem. And the Democrats are trying to reverse that.
I've heard an argument, Steve, that people in wealthier tax brackets are in some ways under audited because, you know, if I make a false claim on a 1040 EZ, it takes one agent about 10 minutes to figure that out. If I, you know, route my money through the Cayman Islands through a complex series of front companies, it takes a lot of agents a lot more time to do that. Is that part of what's trying to be tackled here?
Yes. Because if you draw your income from salary or from interest on a bank account, you'll get W-2s, 1099s, and the IRS can match what you report on your tax return to what information reports they get from your employer and from the bank. And the highest income taxpayers have much more complicated returns, tax returns. They don't just get information returns from an employer. Oftentimes, they're involved in an operating business, whether it's a partnership or a sole proprietorship. And those are very, very hard to audit. And in my study, I don't think it's so much that the rich are hiding money offshore, but rather the rich can avoid taxes, reduce their taxes in different ways, take aggressive positions with respect to gray areas of the law, or maybe have their alter egos, the partnerships, or even the corporations they invest in, take aggressive positions. And so I think that's where the problem is, not so much the offshore hiding of amounts, but just it's very, very hard to sort through these complicated structures, and then it takes years of litigation to collect. Hopefully, with some of that $80 billion, the IRS will hire sophisticated auditors and litigators to go after those amounts.
in our last minute or so, was there something on your wish list in this bill, Steve, that that didn't make it here?
Well, I mentioned before, I would have liked to see loopholes closed, like taxing unrealized gains at death. That was a big one. But I also want to see corporate tax rates go up as well. We're trying to backdoor an increase by going after those very, very large corporations that don't pay a 15% on their financial reports. There's only 150 of them. There's a bigger issue in that U.S. corporations overall are paying much lower taxes as a consequence of ex-President Trump slashing the corporate tax rate from 35 to 21. Biden on the campaign pledged to return it to 28, and initially it was going to be returned to 26 when the House Tax Rating Committees reported out their bill. But reports are that Sinema objected to raising corporate tax rates, and so we included an alternative minimum tax, which is a lot more complicated, raises less money from fewer taxpayers.
We'll leave it there, Steve. Thanks again for joining us today.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you.
That's Steve Rosenthal, senior fellow at the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center. We talked to him today about tax provisions as part of the Inflation Reduction Act before the U.S. House today, aimed at raising revenue to fund some of its climate initiatives. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, the new climate change bill also includes support for electric vehicles. What is on the market? What would this all mean for consumers? An auto industry expert looks at the road ahead for EVs, the supply of those vehicles that's in the market, and what the car companies are doing to try to meet demand. Also, pedestrians, bike riders, and drivers have all seen increasing danger on the roads in recent years. A Wisconsin expert on traffic, safety, and street design joins the show with some solutions to make the roads safer for everyone. You can join in with your suggestions. Start right now. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. That more coming up Monday here on Central Time.